Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. You can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. Today is January 25th, 2017. The markets were up today. Very exciting day for a lot of people. The Dow closing over 20,000 at 20,068. The NASDAQ up as well at 5656 and the S&P at 2298. We are talking about powers of attorney tonight and so much more around estate planning and estate planning documents as well. But powers of attorney will be the initial focus. But we hope to get conversations going and we hope to have callers, listeners calling in with questions. It is so important to get your estate planning documents, folks. We can't stress that enough. So we have an attorney with us this evening, and we're going to talk about that. So make sure you have your pencil ready to take down the phone number to call in. We are live tonight. We will take your questions. Lori C. is in the studio with us. She'll take the calls. And if you want to talk live on air, we'll put you through. And if you're not comfortable talking live on air, just give your question to Lori. She'll write it down, and she'll bring it in. And my guest and I will take a stab at answering your question. If you talk live on air, we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear us without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic and I'll do my best to answer them. The number this evening is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. My guest this evening is Attorney James Ruggiero. Since 1990, Attorney Ruggiero has been helping families and business owners create estate plans aimed at transferring their legacy successfully to the next generation. He's the owner of Ruggiero Law Offices, LLC, with offices in Paoli and Center Valley, Pennsylvania, where he practices in the area of estate planning, estate administration, elder law, business law, and real estate. Jim has developed a niche in dealing with closely held small business owners in advising on formation, growth, and succession of the business. He has advised clients on contract negotiations, employee contracts and disputes, patents, copyright, real estate lease, and purchase. He serves as a board member of the Estate Planning Council of the Lehigh Valley and is an accredited estate planner. Jim has also been on the show before and did such an awesome job. I could actually just sit here and listen to him. Welcome back, Jim.
Lori, thank you for having me back tonight. I appreciate it very much so. I'm happy to be here with the audience tonight. And audience, we love questions.
Now, and Jim, and in that little intro, it sounded like it was skewed toward businesses, but you really incorporate good, strong estate planning as well as working with businesses.
So fundamentally, I'm an estate planner. That's what I describe myself as. And all of our client families have different needs. We help many families with small businesses. We help families with aging parents in place. We help families with children with special needs. We're problem solvers, Lori. We help plan, and the goal is to try and solve some problems before they start with good planning.
And now you know why I like Jim so much, because he's a problem solver, and that's my go-to word as well, and why we have this show, and why I hope our listeners in Lehigh Valley are very fortunate to have a show that tries to bring knowledgeable folks to talk about issues that they need to pay attention to. So I want to give the number again because we love questions. That's what makes it more fun for us. And if you have any tonight around these areas, the number is 610-758-8810. So we're going to talk about some of the problem solving that needs to get done with estate planning and documents. And one of the big things is power of attorney, Jim. Can we talk or spend some time initially here talking about powers of attorney? What's going on in the field? What do we need to pay attention to? And what should our listeners know?
So let me give the listeners at home a brief background regarding powers of attorney and specifically with regards to Pennsylvania law. We have had some updates with regards to the law in Pennsylvania regarding general durable powers of attorney. So we have Pennsylvania law written in statutes, and Chapter 56 governs powers of attorney. And in 2014, for the first time in a long time, we updated the law regarding powers of attorney, and that was known as Act 95. And that was signed by then-Governor Tom Corbett. Part of it took effect when he signed it, and the balance took effect January 2015. And in the haste to get the law passed, there were some oversights, some deficiencies. And so there have been technical corrections and amendments that have been made in 2016. So we also have Act 103 that has made some corrections to the existing statutes, and also in an overall omnibus amendment to what we call the PEF code. There's also Act 79 that helps with some changes with regards to powers of attorney. And a power of attorney is a written set of instructions where you delegate authority to an agent to act on behalf of the principal. The person who signs the power of attorney, giving it to an agent, makes sure that they give a written set of instructions that says, if I can't make decisions on my own behalf, I'm naming you as my agent to be the one who's going to make important decisions on my behalf.
And there's lots of room in that power. So we're going to talk about that. Jim, I do have a call on line one. It's a tax question. So
Sure. Let
me take Dave from Allentown. Can you hear me?
I can hear you very well, Laurie.
Hi,
yeah.
Dave. How can I help you?
Hi, Laurie. You actually know me. And it's an odd question. And I'm taking you off topic, unfortunately. I was going to call you last week with this, and I didn't get a chance to.
Okay.
I was talking to a couple of accountants who were discussing the tax ramifications of a Roth IRA,
mm-hmm.
and they didn't know I said I would ask you.
Mm-hmm.
So I was wondering if you could take us through what a Roth IRA means when you reach 65 or whatever and you start taking the funds out of there. What are the tax ramifications in there?
Well, a Roth IRA, first of all, if you're the owner of the Roth IRA, there could have been a number of ways that you might have accumulated funds or contributed funds or transferred funds to a Roth IRA. You can have a regular Roth IRA that you made contributions over, you know, many years. You could do a conversion to a Roth IRA from a regular IRA, or you could have a Roth 401k feature that could eventually roll over to a Roth IRA. The purpose of a Roth IRA is that we are putting in after-tax dollars into that. So we're not getting any kind of deduction when we're putting those monies in. But what we do get is the benefit of tax-free growth and earnings over time. If we're the owner of that Roth IRA, there is no required minimum distribution out of that Roth IRA. So we could just let it sit there. And Jim, tonight, the attorney would tell you for estate planning purposes, sometimes that's a great estate planning tool to have a Roth IRA, that if we don't need the monies during our lifetime, there's no required minimum distribution. That's a great asset to pass on to our heirs. So there is no required minimum distribution. So when we're talking about the tax implications after age 65, I don't know where that age 65 is coming from. I don't know what that age is. There's no required minimum distributions. So if you inherit a Roth IRA, now you have required minimum distributions as a beneficiary over your life expectancy, but it's not income taxable. It just has a required minimum distribution.
And after 59 and a half, when you're the owner of the IRA, you can take out the money with the Roth from the Roth without any tax consequences. Before then, there's a potential penalty if you take it out prior to 59 and a half.
Because then the earnings would be an early distribution. But the IRS always lets us, that's a great point Jim made, the original contributions are always tax-free. And there's a hierarchy of what comes out first, and the original contributions come out first. But
I guess that was the basis of the discussion, was whether or not when you start, if you get a distribution, if that is whether or not those funds are taxable or not, is what they were
right.
Not sure.
Contributions
of.
Come out first, then earnings, and if you're already age 59 and a half, the earnings can come out tax-free as well. If you take out the earnings prior to reaching age 59 and a half, you'll have a tax on the earnings and penalty. But original contributions come out first, which is why it's important to make sure you're tracking it. Okay?
Wow. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling,
both
Dave.
Of you. Thank you.
Thank
All
you.
Right.
Appreciate it. Folks, if you have questions, and you see how the wonderful thing about our work and what we do is I had a tax perspective, Jim had an estate planning perspective, and remembered about the tax perspective as well. So there's a lot of give and take in these fields, and things that impact us financially, as I always say, can impact you across all the elements of financial planning. Folks, if you have questions, we love them. Phone number 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and you receive a tax deduction. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love on WDIY. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. I have in the studio with me this evening Attorney Jim Ruggiero from Ruggiero Law Offices right here in Center Valley, as well with an office in Paoli. And Jim focuses on estate planning and other things that relate to that, which involve sometimes also advising business owners as well. Jim, in particular, we were talking about POAs, powers of attorney, which I want to go back to, but I also want to mention again, folks, if you have questions, you're welcome to call in. I love Dave's question. And at the break, it got Jim and I talking about all of the aspects that could be impacted by having a Roth IRA with good estate planning. So if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. So, Jim, you were mentioning before our caller that there were some changes in powers of attorney for Pennsylvania, Act 95, back effective 1-1-2015. But, in fact, there were a few things that weren't exactly
technical corrections.
Tied up.
Yes. Some of those were with regards to commercial powers of attorney. So they don't have to carry with them the same duties that an agent has towards a principal. When you acknowledge a power of attorney and you say, I'm going to be the agent for the principal, you become a fiduciary. And so what does that mean? It means you take the responsibility to act in the best interest of the principal, not in your best interest. So you step into the shoes of the principal, so you need to carry out their plan as if they were the ones doing the activity. So let's talk about a Roth IRA. If I own a Roth IRA and I become incapacitated, I can't change the beneficiary designation on that Roth IRA. I might want to for my estate planning purposes. If I want to leave it to my grandchildren as opposed to my children, because it's a great way to defer taxes with the requirement of distribution and set up a pension for a pensionless generation, I can leave money to my grandchildren in a Roth vehicle, which I love.
Yep.
And I always say to my clients who are retired, you should talk every year with your CPA about possible Roth conversions, because if you can make gifts each year by converting to a Roth and paying the income taxes on the conversion, you're setting your children up for long-term success. Because oftentimes when people inherit traditional IRAs, they have to pay a higher tax when the money comes out because of their earnings are greater than their parents, so their parents are in a lower tax bracket. So you can do an analysis, and if the children are going to pay more to take the money out, then why not convert to a Roth and pay the tax differential, which is a lower rate?
And estate planning, too, isn't just the documents. It's exactly what Jim was just talking about. He's talking with clients about passing on your estate and using vehicles such as the Roth IRA, because we also have clients who are elderly, Jim, who end up having nursing care costs. So sometimes they're in a nursing home, they have huge medical expenses, and if they have an IRA, they could also convert it. Tell us what that power of attorney does. You mentioned that you can maybe change a beneficiary. I want to know from you, is that typical in a power of attorney? And then I also would love to know, how many people are really thinking about that and understanding that if mom or dad are incapacitated, that they could take that power of attorney that far because they might not need the money?
So this is a critical question, Lori, because as a result of Act 95 occurring, you no longer have the ability to automatically make gifts that will make someone eligible for government benefits. The Act says the family is limited to making limited gifts to what the federal annual exclusion rate is, which is this year $14,000. So you can't carry out a good estate plan if you have a power of attorney that limits the amount of gifts that are able to go out of your estate. When we meet with our families, we have to find out what their goals are. And if it is transferring wealth, we have to talk about, what about a crisis? What if you're in a nursing home? What if you have these bills that are going to be $120,000 a year? How can we save the assets for your family? And by giving an agent broad powers and a customized general durable power of attorney, they're able to do that. And if you don't have a power of attorney in place, you can't do any of this planning in Pennsylvania. You totally are hamstrung by not having one that has all of the right powers. And Act 95 really reduced the powers that were granted, limited what we call hot powers, instead of broadening them. So you can customize your own power of attorney to expand these hot powers. So if you don't have them, it's a big problem for the family.
Mm-hmm. So the client can come in, talk to the attorney and say, hey, yes, I understand. I would like to give them broad powers, but what are my parameters, or I'm looking for, Jim's watching me, I'm trying to say, what are the boundaries?
So we have triggers that we can build into
there
it.
There you go.
So it's about checks and balances, because it's important. Any gifts that are made have to be in line with the client's estate plan. You can't all of a sudden make an unlimited gift of a client's $500,000 in assets to a local charity unless that's what they're last will and testament or the revocable living trust says. If it says, I give my estate equally to my three children, then that's the plan that has to be carried out by the agent. But sometimes you have to give it away in order to keep it. So lifetime gifting can be a very important technique that families employ to not lose all the money to pay for these nursing home costs. Because qualifying an individual for medical insurance to pay for care at a skilled nursing facility is an important discussion that we have with elderly clients. We have Medicaid medical assistance available to cover that. They've paid into the system their whole lives. So we don't want to see them go broke just because they have to go into skilled care.
And sometimes it's also about having high net worth clients who may never be able to gift away enough to qualify for Medicaid or governmental support, but it might be just a gifting strategy to reduce estate or inheritance taxes. So it's not always about impoverishing the parents.
Correct. And one thing to understand about this gifting process, if you engage in the gifting process to qualify for Medicaid sooner than later, you're not going to change where that person is or the quality of life. It's not going to put them out of somewhere. It's just going to speed up the process that the insurance kicks in. And we're talking about our high net worth clients. That tax rate, that federal estate tax, is 40%. So if we can give dollars away during the lifetime of a client and give them in an avoidance of a future 40% tax, that's a great planning technique. We love to make annual gifts when the clients are never going to spend down their money, and you can intelligently give gifts. You just don't have to give cash. You can give stock. You can buy life insurance that has a death benefit on behalf of children and grandchildren. These are all things that they work with their financial advisors, such as yourself, as being creative in the planning. You can give away ownership interest in the family business that might be worth $14,000 today as a share of stock, but you know the company's going to get sold 5 years from now, could be worth $60,000. So there's a lot of leverage that can be accomplished through this process, but not having the tool in place, which is the power of attorney, you can't then, you know, carry out the plan.
And so that's a little reminder for folks who have powers of attorney and maybe parents who might not have the capacity that they had in the past. Is this something that you need to sit down with their attorney and see if the whole estate plan needs to be revisited again? We had a caller, Lynn from Bethlehem, who had a question. And Lynn, we're going to answer your question when we come back from our break. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your organization or business to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced music programs reaches thousands of locally engaged listeners each day. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable way to enhance your image and to provide information about your services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, call 610-694-8100, extension 6, or visit our website, wdiy.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. The phone number tonight is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. You can call and ask questions live on air or off air. I have with me this evening attorney James Ruggiero, Jim, as I call him, from Ruggiero Law Offices. And we're talking about really estate planning, which includes powers of attorney. And we're kind of focusing on that right now, but we're happy to take your questions, callers, listeners' questions, 610-758-8810. Lynn from Bethlehem called in. Thank you, Lynn, for calling in. And her question, Jim, was she has Roth IRA and has her three children as the beneficiaries with no contingent beneficiaries. Now, if Lynn's a regular listener, she knows I'm adamant about people adding contingent beneficiaries. So she's letting me know she doesn't have any, but she has her three children as primary. She's married, and she wonders if her husband can fight this. And as an aside, she also mentioned her life insurance policy is also this way. So, Jim, I want to ask you, first of all, a couple questions relating to this. So she's married but has her children listed as the primary beneficiary on the Roth IRA. She wonders if her husband can fight this. That's the first question. The second question I want to pose to you is, let's talk about maybe some options she might have as far as contingent beneficiaries.
So when we're discussing beneficiary designations, we first have to distinguish the 401k beneficiary designation versus an IRA beneficiary designation, which includes a Roth IRA. A 401k beneficiary designation is governed under ERISA. So your spouse is the primary beneficiary under that law. And the only way you could have children be those beneficiaries if you would have a spousal waiver executed. IRAs are governed differently. They're not under ERISA. So you can name the three children as primary beneficiaries without any problem whatsoever. Now, can your spouse start a fight after you die? They can always start a fight. They're not going to win the fight, but they could start a fight. So same thing with regards to insurance. There is no requirement that you name your spouse as a beneficiary. And these are what we call non-probate assets. So they're going to pass outside of your estate. So when we're looking at planning for children, we don't know how old your children are. And a general question I always ask my clients is, Is your child an adult at 18, fully mature at 21, or is it some later age, 25 or perhaps 30? I haven't heard anyone tell me that that child is fully mature at 18 or 21 in a long time. The snowflakes need help. So generally 25 to 30 is that age of maturity, perhaps. So what we like to do is have IRAs who pass to children go into IRA inheritance trusts, because in June of 2014, the Supreme Court ruled, United States Supreme Court, in a case called Clark versus Ramaker, that children who inherit IRAs from their parents do not get the same protections that those parents have with regards to IRAs. So if you have an IRA and it goes to your spouse, you and your spouse have $1 million exemption from creditors on that IRA or 401k money. But if it goes to children, they don't have those same protections. So in order to protect from creditors and predators, divorce, we like to set up an IRA inheritance trust so that the money will go in trust for those three children. It's there for their use, benefit, and enjoyment, but you also have the opportunity to put guardrails on that money. I like keeping retirement money for retirement. I am a big proponent of creating pensions for pensionless generations. So the good planning tool of creating an IRA inheritance trust can set guardrails where that money will be there when it's time for the children to retire. They'll have to take required minimum distributions, but the rest of the accumulations will be there. But you can have a trustee get the money out in case of a need for those children, but they don't get a blank check.
So that's not subject to the creditors.
Correct.
Because it's in trust.
Yes. And same thing with the life insurance. You can actually direct that life insurance into that inheritance trust, believe it or not, the IRA inheritance trust.
Jim, I have a caller on line one. And Alberto, can you hear us? Alberto, can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you. How are you?
Hi, good. I just have a few minutes to answer this question. So do you want to go ahead?
Sure. I don't know if it's a simple question or not, but my sister, she's retired, living off of Social Security, and she is now residing in South America. She had a house here that was foreclosed, and I just received a couple of forms on in the mail for her stating how much the value of the real estate and how much it was actually valued when the house was sold at auction.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a discrepancy. It's like from $240,000 to what they consider the house value at $160,000. The house actually sold for $131,000. So I was under the impression that all that stuff would be considered income to her. So I'm not sure how she would have to deal with that as far as, like, you know, that she has to file income taxes on that and report that, or being that she's on Social Security, I don't know if she will have to do anything about it or not.
Okay, let me help address that question with Lori's help, because there's mm-hmm. a tax component to that. But if the house was valued at $240,000 but was sold at a sheriff sale for $130,000, I'm assuming what you mean is the mortgage was $240,000.
Yes.
Okay. So there's a deficiency. And
yes.
So that amount is $110,000.
Yes.
So from the mortgage foreclosure standpoint, and back in a prior life, I used to be a litigator. At one point, I did thousands of mortgage foreclosures on behalf of a large bank whose building we happen to be in here in Pennsylvania. The creditor has to then take action to go against the individual to recover the deficiency. So
yeah.
You have to get a deficiency judgment against the debtor.
Okay.
So if a house gets sold at sheriff sale, it's not automatic that the creditor can come after you for the deficiency. And not having seen the paperwork, I can't tell you whether they filed for a deficiency judgment here. But even
okay.
if they did, okay, then they're seeking to recover the debt. So they haven't discharged the obligation. And I'm going to get Lori to talk about what the discharge of the debt would mean if they abandon the claim for the $110,000.
Right. So she may receive a tax reporting document, and I think it's a 1098A or C codes. I don't know off the top of my head, where they might show what the cancellation of debt is. And then that could come back as income to the party receiving that. And depending on if there's no bankruptcy here, she may be insolvent. Mm-hmm. And it, to the extent she's insolvent, it's not going to be taxable, even if she has not filed for bankruptcy. So okay. Typically what we will do for clients is we will work through a worksheet to determine if they're insolvent or not, looking at all their assets. And okay. if there are no assets or those assets don't exceed the obligation, then some or none of it may be taxable. So there is some work to do, I would say. And if she was, if she's a U.S. citizen and she's, you know, not here, just living on Social Security, she still may have a tax return to file. And if she has that reported on that 1098, then you should file and just attach that worksheet and show what's taxable or not.
And also, generally, a creditor cannot garnish Social Security income. So that's an important thing to understand. If your sister is just subsisting on Social Security and has less than $110,000 of net worth, if she works through the insolvency worksheet and is found to be insolvent, that debt's going to go away and she's not going to have an income tax problem. The danger is that she'll get taxed on that debt cancellation.
Okay. All right, Alberto, we're at our halfway break. Thanks for calling in. I appreciate it. Folks, we're at our break. Questions, 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
And you are listening to WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station, your source for NPR news, public affairs, and a great mix of hand-picked music. Lehigh Valley weather, current conditions, 45 degrees under fair skies. Tonight, chance of showers, lows around 40. Thursday, chance of rain with highs around 49. Friday and Saturday, partly sunny skies each day, with highs in the mid-30s. The time now is 6:32. Now back to your financial choices with our host, Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Jeff. Welcome back, folks. If you have questions and want to join the fun, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810 because this is fun, isn't it, Jim? Problem solving.
It's a blast. We love the questions.
That's what we're doing. I know.
It's Jeopardy without Alex Trebek.
Oh, so folks, 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air or off air if you're not comfortable talking live on air. We have fun either way. So Jim Ruggiero is an attorney, has an office in Center Valley, Pennsylvania. Ruggiero Law Offices. Jim is foremost an estate planning attorney, and you can see all of the areas that even estate planning attorneys have touched when we are talking about Roth IRAs, beneficiary designations, real estate transactions, mortgage, cancel. It can cover so many areas, and it can get complicated. That's why it's good to go with someone experienced. So let's talk about this very important element while we're alive. A lot of people are, I think, must be afraid to do their estate planning documents because they're afraid to die or something. And what they have to realize is, okay, let's live a long time. And if we're going to live a long time, then you definitely need a power of attorney. So power of attorney, some people will say, gosh, Jim, you know, I just don't know who to pick. How do I figure that out? Can you help our listeners think that through?
And clients are always resistant to estate planning because we've got to talk about death. We've got to talk about taxes. But when we talk about powers of attorney, it's an advanced directive. You need to have implicit and explicit trust for the people that are named inside your estate planning documents, but particularly the power of attorney, because the agent has such broad powers under a general durable power of attorney that's done right. They can sell your house. They can use your credit cards. They can open up a bank account for you. They can close a bank account for you. They can change a beneficiary designation on a retirement account. And you want your agent to have these broad powers because when your agent needs the power to act in your best interest, they really need that power. So we'd rather be a broad, inclusive power of attorney as long as we trust the agent implicitly or explicitly. So who is that person or persons or corporation best suited to serve as an agent? It depends on every family's individual situation. I'm married. My wife is my agent. So if something happens to me, she's going to step up to the plate and take care of things that she needs to do for our family. But if either one of us are unable to do it for each other, then we've chosen another trusted friend or family member, I'm not going to disclose, to be that successor. But, you know, we're, I like to say, relatively younger. We're accumulating resources. We don't have a multi-million-dollar estate where I would really worry about things running away. And that's important. But, you know, the size of the estate matters as well, because the complexities as you get into larger estates often require a good, you know, CPA who's willing to serve, or a professional agent, or a corporate agent such as a bank or an investment company to be a co-agent under a power of attorney. The nice thing about using a corporate co-agent when it's warranted is you have professional oversight and management, where when you have a family member, they're not experienced in the role of an agent and they're not aware of the duties that are more than just signing checks. You've got these broad powers. It's not just to pay the bills. It's also to make sure that the principal's properly taken care of. So to me, it comes back to, who do you trust? So if you don't have any family, then you have to look to trusted professionals.
Because that happens too. I mean, I've had clients who, you know, they didn't marry, they didn't have children, only child, and they don't have family members. So either,
they have pets.
Right. So either it is a trusted friend, which, you know, a trusted friend sometimes as executor, and maybe you're giving everything to them. That sounds good, because you're going to be dead then anyway. But you also want to make sure, if you're alive, that you do have that trusted friend who will take care of you during your while you're living. You don't want them to impoverish you. So, you know, I imagine too, you can have those conversations with people and observe them when you're trying to make these important decisions. Observe what they do with their own family. Do they have good family relationships? Are they caretakers naturally? There are some things that can kind of clue you in to whether they're going to be a good person or not.
And we have a question we're going to answer in a moment. But before we get to that, let's just talk about agents, because continue the conversation. You have a general durable power of attorney, where I always say, who's the best business mind in the family? But then we also have healthcare powers of attorney, and you have agents who make healthcare decisions. And that business minded person might not be the best person to make healthcare decisions. So you can have different agents for your different types of powers of attorney. And that's an important thing to consider, because you have someone that's skilled in healthcare, you want them to be involved in your healthcare decision-making process.
And I want to talk about more of that as after we take this question. So we had Nell from Allentown call in, and she asked, I assume it's a she, high net worth estates taxable at 40%. So I think she's referring to something we mentioned earlier about some of the estates can have a 40% federal estate tax. Clarify what high net worth means and the amount. And Jim, I'm also going to mention, can we also not forget about Pennsylvania inheritance tax? So let's tell Nell what we mean by high net worth at 40%.
Well, now we live in a world where we measure wealth in the term of billions today. Unfortunately, the millionaire next door feels not safe economically. So when I'm talking high net worth subject to the federal estate tax, it's an individual with $5,450,000 of assets that they own at the time of their death, or a married couple that has more than $10,900,000 at the time of their death, which is indexed for inflation. So that 40% tax kicks in after the first $5,450,000 or $10,900,000. So only 0.2% of the United States is subject to the federal estate tax. There's talk about eliminating the estate tax, but I just was at the Heckerling Estate Planning Institute in Florida, which I go every couple of years. In years past, 40,000 families have been subject to the federal estate tax. Since the exemption level went up to approximately now near $11 million, only 4,000 families a year are subject to the estate tax. So with 3,000 advisors there, you've got one in a third tax returns or families to represent that are subject to the federal estate tax. So for 99.8% of the population in the United States and our clients, they don't have to worry about the federal estate tax. But for the 0.2%, it's a big problem.
Mm-hmm. And then we have
a Pennsylvania inheritance tax that starts at $1. So tax planning, we always say, is extremely important. I think the most important tax planning we do today is income tax planning.
Mm-hmm.
Because inheritance taxes in Pennsylvania, there are no inheritance taxes between husband and wife. Governor Tom Ridge back in 2000 eliminated them. And the rate that children pay and grandchildren pay, what we call lineal descendants, is 4.5%. So siblings, brothers and sisters, they would have to pay a 12% rate. All others pay 15%. Charities pay zero. So if you're worried about paying estate taxes, don't, unless you've got more than $11 million. If you're worried about paying inheritance taxes, if you've got $1 million, that's a $45,000 tax that goes down to your children. You can move to Florida, North Carolina, or South Carolina if you don't like these inheritance tax. Or, you know, you can move up to New Hampshire if you like the cold weather. But the inheritance tax should not be a defining feature of governing how you make your estate planning decisions.
You know, now also to add that there is a lot more income tax planning within our estate planning. But I also like to remind people that sometimes the trigger people have to go do estate planning or updating estate documents or even obtaining state documents, so often people will think, oh, well, I'm not subject to the federal estate tax, so I'm not worried about it. But that's not what estate planning is about, and that's not what obtaining estate documents is about. It's about the proper transfer of the assets that you've worked so hard to accumulate to your heirs or to your charities of choice. You still need estate planning.
People ask me all the time, why should I do estate planning? Ask them a simple question. Do you love your wife? Do you love your kids? Does family matter to you? Because if you answer yes, yes, and yes to all those questions, then that's why you do estate planning. Because you don't want to leave the plan up to the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. You don't want to find out when you're the spouse that your spouse didn't have a will, and so therefore half of your estate is going to go to your children who are under 18 and be in trust till they're 18, and you're only going to get half to take care of your family. So I've had families suffer from the lack of having a will. I've had families suffer from the lack of having a general durable power of attorney in place. I watched the family have to go through a fight over how to take care of the family business because there was no power of attorney in place, how to deal with the sale of real estate. We had a 50-some-year-old gentleman have a stroke and become incapacitated, and he had no planning in place. The only thing his spouse could do was petition the court to put a guardianship in place. And then there were children from a prior relationship. So as you might imagine, that's when the fight breaks out.
Yeah. So back to the importance of the power of attorney, the will, the proper beneficiary designations, primary designations, contingent beneficiary designations. We talked about powers of attorney tonight, durable powers of attorney, more in the sense of the financial aspect and the financial decisions that your agent can do for you in times of incapacity or whatever circumstances may apply at the time. And Jim had mentioned healthcare powers of attorney. So I also want to talk about that. We're coming up on our next break momentarily. If you have questions, we still welcome them. We have plenty of time. I've loved the questions tonight. I love my audience. They're such good listeners and have great questions. If you have them, you could talk live on air with us or off air. The phone number is 610-758-8255. 615-588-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And when we come back, we'll continue our discussion with Attorney James Ruggiero and from Ruggiero Law Offices. And as we wrap up at the end of the show, we're going to give you a website and a way to reach Jim if interested. Phone number 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org. WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station.
Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Your Financial Choices with Lori Siebert, and I have with me this evening Attorney Jim Ruggiero from Ruggiero Law Offices, and we're talking about any number of estate planning topics, and in particular, powers of attorney. And we are going to talk about healthcare powers of attorney in addition tonight, whether we should have that as part of, you know, a regular power of attorney, should it be separate? And if you have questions, we still have some time, 610-758-8810. Jim, I first want to wrap up our discussion about the durable power of attorney, in particular the financial aspects of that. When you have named your agent, and now your agent, you know, maybe you're incapacitated, and now they take over and they have all these financial transactions they may be executing for you and financial decisions. What might be their record-keeping responsibility? What can we alert our listeners to who may be powers of attorney? What can they do to make sure they're following that fiduciary role that they now have, taking care of the principal, could be their parent, aunt, uncle, whatever? What kind of record-keeping should they be doing just to make sure everything's tied in a knot?
So an agent should keep meticulous records. They should keep a detailed account of their time spent acting as an agent under general durable power of attorney. And most agents never do that. And they should also be able to provide financial statements to the principal and know that ultimately they can be held accountable by a court. They could be called to file an accounting with the court at any time for all of their actions as an agent. So it's really important to understand that when you sign on to be an agent, record keeping is part of the job. So we advise our clients the best thing they can do is to be transparent in their actions, to be accountable to the principal, to provide quarterly updates of activity. Also, we like to build in some safeguards in our general durables of power of attorney and compel the agent to account to the client's CPA to make sure that we have a check and a balance involved, because we do have real elder abuse that occurs in Pennsylvania and nationally with regards to these powers of attorney being abused and not used. So it is always a concern. So that's why I talk about the trust. But as an agent, you want to be able to produce the bank statements. I always advise clients, pay the $3 and get the paper statements.
Yeah.
So when you start acting as an agent, on day one, they could be 12 years down the line where you're compelled to file an accounting. And we've litigated that case in orphans court. Imagine having to come up with 12 years worth of records from the banks and financial institutions when you never, ever did from day one. And I've also recently encountered an experience where the banks don't keep records past 7 years any longer. They're not even on microfiche. So we need to go back for 10 years, but we can only go back 7 because the records don't exist at the financial institution. So you should pay a bookkeeper to keep a running balance in QuickBooks or Quicken for you if you're unable to do that. But you need to be able to account for all of the ins and outs of a person's account while you were the agent. You're going to be responsible for decisions to buy a house, sell a house. Did you sell it for the right price? Did you sell that stock for a right price? Did you pay yourself as an agent? Did you pay yourself too much money as an agent? And it's a job, by the way. So agents can be compensated. Let's point that out. If you're one of five in a family taking care of mom or dad, I think it's important to understand you should get paid for that job because you're helping preserve the family's assets. Mm-hmm. And the other four aren't stepping up to the plate and doing that work. So we like to advise the agents, it's a job, but you have to get paid for it, but you have to do the job properly.
I love that you brought up the record keeping because so often clients ask, how long do I have to keep these tax records? How often do I have to keep these bank records? And there are certain pat answers that are given. One, I always tell everyone, keep all your tax returns forever. That's just what I suggest. But a lot of times people will think, well, I only have to keep them 3 years because the IRS can come back. But this isn't the same game, folks. Keep that in mind. When you're working as an agent, as Jim mentioned, if it could be year 12 and now someone might take you to court saying you abused your power and you might have to account and it could go back from the beginning.
It would definitely start at the beginning. And one of the changes under the technical corrections of the law, a judge can now assess costs against you for the cost of the accounting. So that cuts both ways. If you're the agent and you produce all the records meticulously and you've done everything the right way, the person that sought the accounting may be forced to pay your costs for producing it. But imagine the cost of creating a line item accounting for 12 years worth of transactions. We filed that in Orphans Court before. It's 104 pages long.
Yeah.
When you have to cover all the ins and outs with, you know, the financial transactions occur, and that includes the investments, the monthly dividends, the stock purchases, the sales. So you're responsible for all those things as an agent. So if your name is on the account as an agent, you're responsible. If you're handling someone's finances, you're responsible. So from the day you start, you need to keep records. And also you want to get reimbursed for your costs. So you need to keep records for your own expenses, mileage, gas, travel, things like that. So it's important to keep meticulous records.
Great. Now let's talk about the healthcare power of attorney. Let's talk about what is it? Why do we need it? What's a living will? I think a lot of people don't know what that is. And does it need to be a separate document or can it be a separate document from the regular power of attorney?
So one of the technical corrections to the power of attorney law moved the health care powers from Chapter 56 to Chapter 54 that governs health care. So we don't ever put health care powers inside a general durable power of attorney. Now, in other states, they do that. I don't think it's a great idea. Our Pennsylvania healthcare power of attorney, also called a limited durable power of attorney for healthcare and a living will combined, we have a statutory form in Pennsylvania. It runs about 7 pages. A good comprehensive general durable power of attorney could be 30 to 40 pages long. Imagine you're a doctor and you're trying to figure out where the healthcare powers are and what someone's decisions are. You want to use the Pennsylvania statutory power when it makes sense. So a limited durable power of attorney for healthcare is a specific type of power of attorney. It's a springing power of attorney. It springs into effect when I become incapacitated. As long as I'm able to communicate effectively to my doctor my medical wishes and decisions, then there's no need for the agent to step up under a limited durable healthcare power of attorney. But if I can't communicate to my doctor, I'm incapacitated, then the agent takes over. That's why it springs into effect. General durable powers of attorney can be effective immediately or they can be springing. Every situation varies. We discuss that with the clients. But a limited durable power of attorney designates an agent to make broad decisions with regards to healthcare. Admit someone to a hospital, discharge someone to a hospital, consent to surgery, refuse surgery, hire and fire doctors, social workers, things like that. So anything I could do, I give that to my agent. So it's important to have that because a living will is also called an advance directive, governs end-of-life situations. It's very limited. It covers a narrow set of circumstances. That living will is our ability to tame the dying process. What do I mean by that? Well, while dying is I'm 85 years old, I've got late-stage Alzheimer's, and I go to the hospital with a stroke. and I want to have death with dignity, but I don't have a living will, so they use every medical procedure known to keep me alive for, you know, 6 more weeks instead of letting me pass peacefully in 2 to 3 days. So being hooked up to a ventilator, having mechanical respiration is something that I wouldn't necessarily want if I'm at the end of my life, cardiac resuscitation. These are all choices. We can tame that process because end of life, the last few days, you can spend $250,000 to be in emergency and ICU and still pass. And Medicare is going to pick up a lot of that, but your family is going to have to pay the 20% copay if you don't have that coverage. I want to control that. I don't want to have too many people having a hand in my medical decisions. So Living Will says, if you can't cure me, you can't heal me, there's no chance of a reasonable hope of recovery, don't artificially prolong the dying process. So I really hate the term living will because I think it's a misdirection. So really, it's limit medical treatment at the end of life. So I haven't come up with a great name for that living will other than what we currently have. Someday, I hope to. But the living will and the limited durable power of attorney go together. I tell my clients they're two documents, but we staple them together. And in the standard Pennsylvania form, you've got part one, you got part two, you got part three. You keep them all together. You make some choices with regards to your healthcare treatment with a living will. You can decide, do I want tube feeding at the end of my life or not? And again, it's a choice. Do I want to be an organ donor? Do I want to have my agent follow these instructions, or are they only guidance? So these are critical decisions that I've had to make recommendations to my clients. And when you're healthy, it doesn't seem like a big deal. But when you have ALS and you've been told that you're not going to be able to breathe on your own in 3 months and you're going to be on a vent, you have to make a critical path decision. Do you want that? It matters. And do you want to have death with dignity or not?
And sometimes that takes the guilt away from the kids, too, if they know that that's your wishes. You hear that all the time. You know, I'm glad mom and dad.
My client always says, I want them to pull the plug. I don't want to be, you know, have my life, the dying artificially prolonged. So my agent must follow these instructions. I don't want the kids to get wishy-washy at the end of life. They've led full lives, and they don't want to just be stuck in a hospital for time that doesn't going to make it better.
And sometimes another benefit of having separate health care versus the regular power of attorney is sometimes those are very different people. And you touched on that earlier. You can have that financial person in the family, or you can have the person who's not financial but really is a caregiver and knows what mom and dad want.
I want that caregiver. I want that doctor or nurse. I want someone who's going to be a strong advocate for me in the healthcare system. We've all experienced healthcare in the U.S. today. We have to be advocates for our own healthcare, and I want that child who is the aggressive one to be my advocate under that healthcare power of attorney. Business mind might not be the most aggressive person in a setting where it's a terrible time. You're watching a loved one die. You're advised that they want to put them on hospice. Well, you don't want to think about mom or dad going to hospice. You don't want to say they can do that because that's talking about the end. So you're reluctant to let them have that palliative care come on and have all those machines removed. I've had enough personal experience acting as an agent under healthcare power of attorney and having someone's wishes carried out pursuant to the living will to tell you it's important. It's a gift you give your children by having these advanced directives in place so that we're able to know what mom or dad wants.
Wonderful, Jim. And while you're getting your power of attorney and your healthcare directives and your healthcare power of attorney and living will, also get your regular will. And maybe a trust. It may it be in your future, depending on what you where you want assets to go. Jim, we're got about a minute and a half left. I don't know if that was a question that just came in, but could you please give your contact information?
Sure. I'd be happy to take any questions and follow from the audience. You can contact Jim through our website at www.ruggierolaw.net. That's R-U-G-G-I-E-R-O law. Our phone number is 484-224-3900. 3487. And our address is 3477 Corporate Parkway, Suite 100, Center Valley, just down the street from the Promenade Shops.
Very good. Thanks so much for being here, Jim. It's always a pleasure. We've got to do it more often. And
thanks for having me, Lori. I'm happy to be a guest on your show, and it's a great show, and I love listening to it. And, you know, I'm happy I can be on it, and I thank the audience for all their great questions.
Yeah,
tonight.
We had great questions tonight. Thanks, listeners, for calling in. We really appreciate it. Jeff, I want to thank you for being here. Lori, thanks for being here and taking those questions as well. Next week, it's tax time, folks. Getting ready and filing a complete and accurate return. That's what we're going to talk about, which is a whole window and a whole topic in itself. So we'll take questions next week as well. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive, and make the best of your financial choices. Have a great week.